I think it's helpful to recall that just yesterday we celebrated the joyful, glorious feast of the Transfiguration of the Lord, a glimpse of heavenly glory appearing in this fallen world. And I think it's helpful because very often we are there's more impact of the darkness than there is of the light. I know we're passing through a stormy weather and it's dark and there's pouring rain and flooding, but that's not the whole story. The darkness of the world or the darkness of the weather is not the whole story. We remember that the destination the Lord has in mind for us is a glorious one. That's what we learned yesterday. And the event of the Transfiguration is also meant as an incentive, to give us incentive to persevere when we pass through dark days. This is something we have to recall again and again, because it's often more evident to us, the problems of life are often more evident to us than the blessings. It's true, we have many blessings too. We shouldn't be completely negative either. We live in a world that has weeds and wheat all mixed together in a very complex arrangement that only God can figure out. But oftentimes the weeds dominate our consciousness. So I went to bed last night, and then in the middle of the night, the phone started beeping and making all kinds of loud sounds. What in the world is this? It was some kind of a emergency warning system. Did you get that? It woke me up from a deep sleep. Must have been around midnight. And I looked at the phone and said, well, there's going to be severe flooding in Cavite. Well, thank you, but I'm not in Cavite and I'm not in danger of any flooding. But then I was wide awake because of that warning system. Now, I don't think that's a bad thing. If people are in danger of being overcome by floods, they should be awakened to the danger. I just didn't feel like it applied to my particular phone. Anyway, this is it. I mean, we live in a world where there are floods and there are sudden dangers and things that negative experiences can really dominate us. I went out to take a walk this morning. It wasn't raining at the time. And one of our neighbors down the street told me that the caretaker of the house had died. And I didn't know anything. I didn't even know her name. But I saw her almost every morning out sweeping and taking care of her garden. So she died suddenly, heart attack, 51 years old. And right after this man told me this, it started to pour. I mean, it rained really, really hard. I had to run back. I had an umbrella, but I had to come back. I was soaked even with an umbrella. So this is, I mean, I'm just sharing with you very, very minor personal experiences, but this is life, isn't it? We are preoccupied with getting flooded or drenched or the death of our loved ones, and we forget that glimpse of glory that we saw yesterday. Now, as it happens, the liturgy, well, actually, as always happens, the liturgy gives us guidance and light in reflecting on these things. And as it happens, the passage about the Transfiguration, which we heard yesterday, comes from the beginning of Matthew chapter 17. And today's gospel is the end of Matthew chapter 16. So we take a step backward, you could say, to get perspective. Yesterday, Matthew 17, Jesus brings three of his apostles up the high mountain and he reveals his glory. But just before that, actually 6 days earlier, he told them what we read in what we read in today's gospel. This is somewhere in the region of Caesarea Philippi, and Jesus has been giving profound instructions to the apostles about his identity and about the coming of the Passion. And then he tells them that they also are called, if they want to be his disciples, they're called to share in the cross. Let's work backward through this gospel. The very last line of the gospel is, "Amen, I say to you, there are some standing here who will not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." Now, when we hear that sort of language, we think, well, that must be about the second coming. about Jesus coming in glory. In fact, the verse right before that, working backward again, Jesus speaks about the time when the Son of Man will come with his angels in his Father's glory, and then he will repay each according to his conduct. Well, that is a reference to the second coming. The time will come when Jesus will come in glory and will repay each according to his conduct, will sort out the weeds and the wheat. And so that's a clear reference to that second coming. But then the final verse of today's gospel says, some standing here will not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. Well, that throws us off because he hasn't come yet. And all the people he was talking to in this verse died hundreds, centuries ago, a long time ago. So it didn't happen. So that's why the scholars say, okay, that kind of language, first of all, refers to the second coming, but this particular verse can't mean that because he hasn't come yet, and he's talking about people who are still alive. So then they say, well, it's actually a reference to the resurrection, and all of the apostles were still alive when Jesus died and rose again. They saw his glory. They saw him risen, including his glorious wounds. But then there's a third interpretation of this one verse, and that is, it applies to the experience of seeing the glory of God on the mountain of the Transfiguration. Some standing here will not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. Well, Peter, James, and John, just 6 days after Jesus said this, did see the glory of God shining on the face of Jesus Christ. So they didn't see the full extension of that glory. Well, none of us have seen it yet, but they got this glimpse of glory, and that's shared with us as well. Okay, let's work backward up through this gospel. So there's the glory that is to be revealed. There is the final destination, the culmination of the whole pilgrimage through time. But in the meantime, we're here, and what are we to do? This is where Jesus gives us instructions on what it means to be a disciple, or the conditions of discipleship. And he says it very clearly. Whoever wishes to come after me, whoever wishes to be a follower of mine, a disciple of mine, must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. This idea of denying oneself is always going to be difficult for us because our natural tendency is to serve ourselves or to cater to our own desires or to promote ourselves. Of course, we have to take care of ourselves. We're responsible for ourselves. We care for our bodies. We take care of our responsibilities. But we're not the most important person in our lives. We're not the center of our own existence. That place belongs to God. And insofar as we put God first, we have to deny ourselves. We have to deny or oppose the tendency to put ourselves first. Jesus explains it this way. Well, what if you gain the whole world? What if you gain everything you want? What if you have every advantage that you've ever wanted and you lose your life? What's in it for you? What if you put yourself first and succeed at everything in making yourself the most famous and richest and most powerful person in the world? And you lose your life. What's in it for you? You see how he pushes it to the extreme? This is why we have to continually choose to put God first, to put his kingdom above our kingdom. Because if we don't, then we end up losing everything. What can one give in exchange for his life? What profit is there to gain the whole world and forfeit our life? No profit. It's this constant reminder that the good things of this world are all passing, temporary. So that it doesn't make sense to make those things or our achievements of worldly success into our top priority. It doesn't make sense, even though it seems so appealing and even so obvious. No. With faith, it's more obvious that those things are of very limited value. again, we look at where we're going, what's our long-term goal. We're either going to end up in a glorious, festive, joyful condition, or a terrible, unspeakably horrible condition. The first reading gives us a kind of symbolic presentation of these two options, this selections from the prophet Nahum or Nahum. On one hand, represented by the city of Judah, there's going to be endless rejoicing, restoration, plenty, feasts. And the other extreme is what happens to the city of Nineveh, full of earthly power and glory and dominating with violence. Well, it's going to be destroyed, never more to be seen, completely wiped out. So those represent two options for earthly cities, but they especially represent eternal destiny, our eternal destination. Which city do we want to live in? The city of God or the city of man? City of God, which lasts forever in glory, or the city of man, which will eventually be destroyed? Today's saints choose the heavenly city. I'm talking about Saint Sixtus II and his companions. Sixtus was a pope, but in those days, a pope wasn't like we think of a pope, you know, in a palace in the Vatican. A pope was a man with a price on his head. A pope was a target. One of the first targets of the Roman persecutions was the pope. That's why so many of the popes were martyred. Well, Sixtus II is one of them. He was offering mass together with four deacons in a catacomb in Rome. So catacombs, of course, were burial places, but also places to hide. And he was arrested there and beheaded that same day, August 6th. Did he know that his life was at risk? Yes, of course he knew it. Every Christian knew that there was a brutal persecution. Everybody knew that the first target of the Roman authorities was going to be the clergy. But he dedicated himself, they dedicated themselves to offering worship to God in the liturgy, in the catacombs. And they were martyred for it, and now ever since that time they have been reigning in glory. They see the glory of God. They experience the glory of God. They're not dwelling on the terrible loss and the painful death. That doesn't even seem significant to them now. So that kind of perspective is helpful for us. Yes, the glimpse of glory we had yesterday, the awareness of the glory of the saints in heaven, these are real and important reminders to us of what's going on here. There's more to life than our work and our daily experiences and rainy weather and floods and looking for relief. No, those are all part of our experience, but that's not the whole picture. We look forward to, with sure hope, we look forward to glory, to the coming of the Lord in glory, and to our share in his glory.